He smiled at me and added, "I used to walk on stilts almost as well as you. Now my figure is not suited for it." I smiled too, thinking that he would need a pair of tree trunks as stilts. "When we operated upon you for the opening of the third eye," said the great medical lama, "we were able to observe that portions of your frontal lobe developments were very different from the average, and so we assume that physically you were born to be clairvoyant and telepathic. That is one of the reasons you have received and will receive such intensive and advanced training." He looked at me with immense satisfaction and continued, "You are going to have to remain here at the medical school for a few days. We are going to investigate you thoroughly and see how we can even increase your abilities and teach you much." There was a discreet cough at the door, and my guide the Lama Miniodon up walked into the room. I jumped to my feet and bowed to him, as did the great Chinrobe Nobo. My guide was smiling. "I received your telepathic message," he said to the great medical Lama, "so I came to you as speedily as I was able so that perhaps you would give me the pleasure of hearing your confirmation of my findings in the case of my young friend." He stopped, and smiled at me and sat down. The great Lama Chinrobe Nobo also smiled and said, "Respected colleague, I gladly bow to your superior knowledge in accepting this young man for investigation. Respected colleague, your own talents are numerous, you are startlingly versatile, but never have you found such a boy as this." Then, of all things, they both laughed, and the Lama Chinrobe Nobo reached down somewhere behind him and took out 3 jars of pickled walnuts. I must have looked stupid, for they both turned toward me and started laughing. "Lobsang, you are not using your telepathic ability. If you were, you would be aware that the Reverend Lama and I were so sinful as to have a bet. It was agreed between us that if you came up to my statements, then the Reverend Medical Lama would give you 3 jars of pickled walnuts, whereas if you were not up to the standard claimed by me, I would do a long journey and undertake certain medical work for my friend." My guide smiled at me again and said, "Of course I am going to do the journey for him in any case, and you will be going with me. But we had to get matters straight, and now honor is satisfied." He pointed to the 3 jars and said, "Put them by you, Lobsang. When you leave here, when you leave this room, take them with you, for they are the spoils of the victor, and in this case you are the victor." I really felt remarkably foolish. Obviously I could not use telepathic powers on these 2 high lamas. The very thought of such a thing sent chill shivers along my spine. I loved my guide the Lama Miniodon Dup, and I greatly respected the knowledge and wisdom of the great Lama Chinrobe Nobo. It would have been an insult, it would have been bad manners indeed, to have eavesdropped even telepathically. The Lama Chinrobe Nobo turned to me and said, "Yes, my boy, your sentiments do you credit. I am pleased indeed to greet you and to have you here among us. We will help you with your development." My guide said, "Now Lobsang, you are going to have to stay in this particular building for, perhaps, a week, because you are going to be taught quite a lot about the aura." "Oh yes," he said, interpreting my glance, "I am aware that you think you know all about the aura. You can see the aura, and you can read the aura, but now you have to learn the whys and wherefores of it, and you have to learn how much the other fellow does not see. I am going to leave you now, but I shall see you tomorrow." He rose to his feet and, of course, we rose as well. My guide made his farewells and then withdrew from that quite comfortable chamber. The Lama Chinrobe Nobo turned to me and said, "Do not be so nervous, Lobsang, nothing is going to happen to you. We are merely going to try to help you and to expedite your own development. First of all, let us have a little discussion about the human aura. You of course see the aura vividly and you can understand about the aura, but imagine that you were not so favored, not so gifted. Put yourself in the position of 99 9/10, or even more, of the world's population." He violently rang the little silver bell again, and once again the attendant came bustling in with tea and of course the necessary other things which most pleased me when I was having tea. It might be of interest here to say that we in Tibet sometimes drank in excess of 60 cups of tea in a day. Of course, Tibet is a cold country and the hot tea warmed us, We were not able to get out and buy drinks such as people of the Western world had. We were limited to tea and sampa unless some really kind-hearted person brought from a land such as India those things which were not available in Tibet. We settled down, and the Lama Chinro Bonobo said, "We have already discussed the origin of the aura. It is the life force of a human body. I am going to assume for the moment, Lobsang, that you cannot see the aura and that you know nothing about the aura, because only in assuming that can I tell you what the average person sees and does not see." I nodded my head to indicate that I understood. "Of course, I have been born with the ability to see the aura and things like that, and those abilities had been increased by the operation of the third eye, and on many occasions in the past I had been almost trapped into saying what I saw without it dawning upon me that others did not see the same as I. I remembered an occasion some time previously when I had said that a person was still alive, a person that old Tsu and I had seen lying beside the road, and Tsu had said that I was quite wrong, the man was dead. I had said, 'But Tsu, the man still has his lights on.' Fortunately, as I realized after, the gale of wind which was blowing past us had distorted my words so that Tsu had not comprehended the meaning. On some pulse, however, he had examined the man lying beside the road and found he was alive. But this is a digression. The average man and woman, Lobsang, cannot see the human aura. Some, indeed, hold to the belief that there is no such thing as a human aura. They might just as well say that there is no such thing as air because they cannot see it." The medical lama looked at me to see if I was following him or if my thoughts were straying walnut-wise. Satisfied with my appearance of attention, he nodded sagely and continued, "So long as there is life in a body, then there is an aura which can be seen by those with the power or gift or ability, call it what you will. I must explain to you, Lobsang, that for the clearest perception of the aura the subject who is being seen must be absolutely nude. We will discuss why later. It is sufficient for just ordinary readings to look at a person while they have some clothing on. But if you are going to look for anything whatever connected with a medical reason, then the person must be completely and absolutely nude. Well, completely enveloping the body and extending from the body for a distance of an eighth of an inch to 3 or 4 inches is the etheric sheath. This is a blue-gray mist. One can hardly call it a mist, for although it appears misty one can see clearly through it. This etheric covering is the purely animal emanation. It derives particularly from the animal vitality of the body so that a very healthy person will have a quite wide etheric, it may even be 3 or 4 inches from the body. Only the most gifted, Lobsang, perceive the next layer, for between the etheric and the aura proper there is another band, perhaps 3 inches across, and one has to be gifted and talented indeed to see any colors in that band. I confess that I can see nothing but empty space there. I felt really gleeful about that because I could see all the colors in that space and I hastened to say so. "Yes, yes, Lobsang. I know you can see in that space, for you are one of our most talented in this direction, but I was pretending that you could not see the aura at all because I have to explain all this to you." The medical lama looked at me reprovingly, no doubt, for interrupting the trend of his thoughts. When he thought that I was sufficiently subdued to refrain from further interruption he continued, "First then, there is the etheric layer. Following the etheric layer there is that zone which so few of us can distinguish except as an empty space. Outside of that is the aura itself. The aura does not so much depend upon the animal vitality as upon the spiritual vitality. The aura is composed of swirling bands and striations of all the colors of the visible spectrum, and that means more colors than can be seen with the physical eyes, for the aura is seen by other senses than by the physical sight. Every organ in the human body sends out its own shaft of light, its shaft of rays, which alter and fluctuate as the thoughts of a person fluctuate. Many of these indications are present to a very marked degree in the etheric and in the space beyond. And when a nude body is seen the aura appears to magnify the indications of health or disease, from which it is clear that those of us who are sufficiently clairvoyant can tell of a person's health or otherwise. I knew all about that, this was all child's play to me, and I had been practicing things like this ever since the operation for the third eye. I knew of the groups of medical lamas who sat beside suffering people and examined the nude body to see how they could be helped. I had thought perhaps that I was going to be trained for work such as that. Now, said the medical lama, you are being specially trained, highly trained, and when you go to that great Western world beyond our borders, it is hoped and thought that you may be able to devise an instrument whereby even those with no occult power at all will be able to see the human aura. Doctors, seeing the human aura, and actually seeing what is wrong with a person, will be able to cure that person's illnesses. How, we shall discuss later. I know that all this is quite tiring. Much of that which I have told you is very well known indeed to you, but it may be tiring from this aspect. You are a natural clairvoyant. You may possibly never have thought of the mechanics of the operation of your gift, and that is a matter which must be remedied, because a man who knows only half a subject is only half trained and half useful. You, my friend, are going to be very useful indeed. But let us end this session now, Lobsang. We will repair to our own apartments, for one has been set aside for you, and then we can rest and think on those matters upon which we have so briefly touched. For this week you will not be required to attend any service, that is by order of the Inmost One himself. All your energies, all your devotions, are to be directed solely to mastering the subjects which I and my colleagues are going to put before you. He rose to his feet and I rose to mine. Once again that silver bell was seized in a mighty hand and shaken so vigorously that I really felt that the poor thing would fall to pieces. The attendant monk came running in, and the medical lama Chinro Bonobo said, you will attend upon Tuesday Lobsang Rampa, for he is an honored guest here as you are aware. Treat him as you would treat a visiting monk of high degree. He turned to me and bowed, and of course I hastily bowed back, and then the attendant beckoned for me to follow him. Stop! Bawled the lama Chinro Bonobo. You have forgotten your walnuts. I rushed back and hastily grabbed up those precious jars, smiling somewhat in embarrassment as I did so. Then I hastened on to the waiting attendant. We went along a short corridor and the attendant ushered me into a very nice room which had a window overlooking the ferry across the Happy River. I am to look after you, master, said the attendant. The bell is there for your convenience, use it as you will. He turned and went out. I turned to that window. The view across the Holy Valley entranced me, for the ferry of inflated yak hides was just putting out from the shore and the boatman was pulling along across the swift river. On the other side, I saw, there were three or four men who, by their dress, must have been of some importance, an impression which was confirmed by the obsequious manner of the ferryman. I watched for some minutes, and then, suddenly, I felt more tired than I could imagine possible. I sat down upon the ground without even bothering about a seat cushion, and before I knew anything about it I had toppled over backwards, asleep. The hours droned away to the accompaniment of clacking prayer wheels. Suddenly I sat up, bolt upright, quaking with fear. The service. I was late for the service. With my head on one side I listened carefully. Somewhere a voice was chanting a litany. It was enough. I jumped to my feet and raced for the familiar door. It was not there. With a bone-jarring thud I collided with the stone wall and fell bouncily onto my back. For a moment, there was a blue-white flash inside my head as it too struck the stone, then I recovered and sprang to my feet once more. Panicked at my lateness, I raced around the room and there seemed to be no door. Worse, there was no window either. Lobsang, said a voice from the darkness, are you ill? The voice of the attendant brought me back to my senses like a dash of ice water. Oh, I said sheepishly, I forgot, I thought I was late for service. I forgot I was excused. There was a subdued chuckle, and the voice said, I will light the lamp, for it is very dark this night. A little glimmer came from the doorway. It was in a most unexpected place. And the attendant advanced towards me. A most amusing interlude, he said. I thought at first that a herd of yaks had broken loose and were in here. His smile robbed the words of all offense. I settled down again, and the attendant and his light withdrew. Across the lighter darkness that was the window a shooting star flamed into incandescence, and its journey across the countless miles of space was at an end. I rolled over and slept. Breakfast was the same old dull and dreary tsampa and tea. Nourishing, sustaining, but uninspiring. Then the attendant came and said, "If you are ready, I have to take you elsewhere." I rose to my feet and walked with him out of the room. We went a different way this time, into a part of the Chakpori which I did not know existed. Downwards, a long way downwards until I thought we were descending into the bowels of the Iron Mountain itself. Now there was no glimmer of light except from the lamps we carried. At last the attendant stopped, and pointed ahead. "Go on, straight along and turn into the room on the left." With a nod, he turned and retraced his steps. I trudged on, wondering what now? The room on the left was before me. I turned into it and paused in amazement. The first thing to attract my attention was a prayer wheel standing in the middle of the room. I had time for only a brief glance at it, but even so it appeared to be a very strange prayer wheel indeed. Then my name was spoken. "Well, Lobsang. We are glad you are here." I looked and there was my guide. The Lama Minya Dondup, by his side sat the great medical Lama Chinrob Nobo, and on the other side of my guide there sat a very distinguished looking Indian Lama named Marfata. He had once studied Western medicine, and had indeed studied at some German university which I believe was called Heidelberg. Now he was a Buddhist monk, a Lama, of course, but monk is the generic term. The Indian looked at me so searchingly, so piercingly, that I thought he must be looking at the material comprising the back of my robe. He seemed to look right through me. However, on this particular occasion I had nothing bad on my conscience, and I returned his gaze. After all, why should I not gaze at him? I was as good as he, for I was being trained by the Lama Minya Dondup and by the great medical Lama Chinrob Nobo. A smile forced its way across his rigid lips as if its execution caused him intense pain. He nodded, and turned to my guide. "Yes, I am satisfied that the boy is as you say." My guide smiled, but there was no forcing of his smile. It was natural, spontaneous, and indeed warming to the heart. The great medical Lama said, "Lobsang, we have brought you down here to this secret room because we want to show you things and discuss things with you. Your guide and I have examined you and we are indeed satisfied with your powers, powers that are going to be increased in intensity." Our Indian colleague, Marfata, did not think that such a prodigy existed in Tibet. "We hope that you will prove all our statements." I looked at that Indian and I thought, well, he is a man who has an exalted opinion of himself. I turned to the Lama Chinrob Nobo and said, "Respected sir, the inmost one who has been good enough to give me an audience on a number of occasions has expressly cautioned me against giving proof, saying that proof was merely a palliative to the idle mind. Those who wanted proof were not capable of accepting the truth of a proof no matter how well proven." The medical Lama Chinrob Nobo laughed so that I almost feared I would be blown away by the gale of wind. My guide also laughed, and they both looked at the Indian Marfata who sat looking sourly at me. "Boy," said the Indian, "you talk well, but talk proves nothing as you yourself say. Now, tell me, boy, what do you see in me?" I felt rather apprehensive about this, because much of what I saw I did not like. "Illustrious sir," I said, "I fear that if I say what I see then you might indeed take it amiss and consider that I am being merely insolent instead of replying to your question." My guide the Lama Minya Dondup nodded in agreement, and across the face of the great medical Lama Chinrob Nobo a huge, beaming smile expanded like the rising of the full moon. "Say what you will, boy, for we have no time for fancy talk here," said the Indian. For some moments I stood looking at the great Indian Lama, stood looking until even he stirred a little at the intensity of my gaze. Then I said, "Illustrious sir, you have commanded me to speak as I see, and I understand that my guide the Lama Minya Dondup and the great medical Lama Chinrob Nobo also want me to speak frankly. Now, this is what I see. I have never seen you before, but from your aura and from your thoughts I detect this. You are a man who has traveled extensively, and you have traveled across the great oceans of the world. You have gone to that small island whose name I do not know, but here the people are all white and where there is another small island lying nearby as if it were a foe to the greater land which was the Maya. You were very antagonistic toward those people and they were indeed anxious to take some action against you for something connected with, I hesitated here, for the picture was particularly obscure, it was referring to things of which I had not the slightest knowledge. However, I plowed on, there was something connected with an Indian city which I assume from your mind was Calcutta, and there was something connected with a black hole where the people of that island were gravely inconvenienced or embarrassed. In some way they thought that you could have saved trouble instead of causing it. The great Lama Chinro Bonobo laughed again, and it did my ears good to hear that laugh because it indicated that I was on the right track. My guide gave no indication whatever, but the Indian snorted. I continued, you went to another land and I can see the name Heidelberg clearly in your mind. In that land you studied medicine according to many barbarous rites wherein you did much cutting and chopping and sawing, and did not use systems which we here in Tibet use. Eventually you were given some sort of big paper with a lot of seals upon it. I see also from your aura that you are a man with an illness. I took a deep breath here because I did not know how my next words would be received. The illness from which you suffer is one which has no cure. It is one in which the cells of the body run wild and grow as weeds grow, not according to pattern, not according to the ordained way, but spread and obstruct and clutch at vital organs. Sir, you are ending your own span upon this earth by the nature of your thoughts which admit of no goodness in the minds of others. For several moments, they may have been years to me, there was not a sound, and then the great medical Lama Chinro Bonobo said, that is perfectly correct. Lobsang, that is perfectly correct. The Indian said, the boy was probably primed about all this in advance. My guide, the Lama Minyadon Up said, no one has discussed you, on the contrary much of what he has told us is news to us, for we have not investigated your aura nor your mind for you did not so invite us. But the main point at issue is, the boy Tuesday Lobsang Rampa has these powers, and the powers are going to be developed even further. We have no time for quarrels, no place for quarrels, instead we have serious work to do. Come. He rose to his feet and led me to that big prayer wheel. I looked at that strange thing, and I saw that it was not a prayer wheel after all, but instead was a device standing about 4 feet high, 4 feet from the ground, and it was about 5 feet across. There were two little windows at one side and I could see what appeared to be glass set in those windows. At the other side of the machine, and set off center, were two very much larger windows. At an opposite side a long handle protruded, but the whole thing was a mystery to me, I had not the slightest idea of what it could be. The great medical Lama said, this is a device, Lobsang, with which those who are not clairvoyant can see the human aura. The great Indian Lama Mahavata came here to consult us and would not tell us the nature of his complaint, saying that if we knew so much about esoteric medicine we would know his complaint without his telling us. We brought him here that he could be examined with this machine. With his permission he is going to remove his robe, and you are going to look at him first, and you are going to tell us just what his trouble is. Then we shall use this machine and see how far your findings and the findings of the machine coincide. My guide indicated a spot against a dark wall and the Indian walked to it and removed his robe and other garments so that he stood brown and bare against the wall. Lobsang. Take a very good look at him and tell us what you see, said my guide. I looked not at the Indian, but some way to one side, I put my eyes out of focus as that is the easiest way of seeing the aura. That is, I did not use normal binocular vision, but instead saw with each eye separately. It is a difficult thing indeed to explain, but it consisted in looking with one eye to the left and one eye to the right, and that is just a knack, a trick, which can be learned by almost anyone. I looked at the Indian, and his aura glowed and fluctuated. I saw that he was a great man indeed and of high intellectual power but, unfortunately, his whole outlook had been soured by the mysterious illness within him. As I looked at him I spoke my thoughts. Spoke them just as they came into my mind. I was not at all aware of how intently my guide and the great medical Lama were listening to my words. It is clear that the illness has been brought on by many tensions within the body. The great Indian Lama has been dissatisfied and frustrated, and that has acted against his health, causing the cells of his body to run wild, to escape from the direction of the over-self. Thus he has this complaint here. I pointed to his liver, and because he is a rather sharp-tempered man, his complaint is aggravated every time he gets cross. It is clear from his aura that if he would become more tranquil, more placid like my guide the Lama Minyadondup, he would stay upon this earth longer and so would accomplish more of his task without the necessity of having to come again. Once again there was a silence, and I was pleased to see that the Indian Lama nodded as if in complete agreement with my diagnosis. The medical Lama Chinro Bonobo turned to that strange machine and looked through the little windows. My guide moved to the handle and turned with increasing force until a word from the medical Lama Chinro Bonobo caused him to maintain the rate of rotation at a constant speed. For some time the Lama Chinro Bonobo gazed through the device, then he straightened up and without a word the Lama Minyadondup took his place, while the medical Lama Chinro Bonobo turned the handle as had previously my guide. Eventually they finished their examination, and stood together obviously conversing by telepathy. I made no attempt whatever to intercept their thoughts because to do so would have been a gross slight and would have put me above my station. At last, they turned to the Indian and said, "All that Dusde Lobsang Rampa has told you is correct. We have examined your aura most thoroughly, and we believe that you have cancer of the liver. We believe also that this has been caused by certain shortness of temper. We believe that if you will lead a quiet life you still have a number of years left to you, years in which you can accomplish your task. We are prepared to make representations so that if you agree to our plan you will be permitted to remain here at Chakpurai." The Indian discussed matters for a time, and then motioned to Chinro Bonobo. Together they left the room. My guide the Lama Minyadondup patted me on the shoulder and said, "Well done, Lobsang, well done. Now I want to show this machine to you." He walked across to that very strange device and lifted up one side of the top. The whole thing moved, and inside I saw a series of arms radiating from a central shaft. At the extreme end of the arms there were prisms of glass in ruby red, blue, yellow and white. As the handle was turned, belts connected from it to the shaft caused the arms to rotate, and I observed that each prism in turn was brought to the line which was seen by looking through the two eyepieces. My guide showed me how the thing worked and then said, "Of course this is a very crude and clumsy affair. We use it here for experiment, and in the hope of one day producing a smaller version. You would never need to use it, Lobsang, but there are not many who have the power of seeing the aura as clearly as you. At some time I shall explain the working in more detail, but briefly, it deals with a heterodyne principle wherein rapidly rotating colored prisms interrupt the line of sight and thus destroy the normal image of the human body and intensify the much weaker rays of the aura." He replaced the lid and turned away to another device standing on a table at a far corner. He was just leading the way to that table when the medical Lama Chinro Bonobo came into the room again and joined us. "Ah," he said, coming over to us, "so you are going to test his thought power? Good. I must be in on this." My guide pointed to a queer cylinder of what appeared to be rough paper. "This, Lobsang, is thick, rough paper. You will see that it has innumerable holes made in it. Holes made with a very blunt instrument so that the paper is torn and leaves projections. We then folded that paper so that all the projections were on the outside and the sheet, instead of being flat, formed a cylinder. Across the top of the cylinder we affixed rigid straw, and upon a small pedestal we fixed a sharp needle. Thus we have the cylinder supported on an almost frictionless bearing. Now watch me." He sat down and put his hands on either side of the cylinder, not touching the cylinder, but leaving about an inch or an inch and a half space between his hands and the projections. Soon the cylinder started to spin, and I was astounded as the thing picked up speed and was soon rotating at quite a merry rate. My guide stopped it with a touch, and placed his hands in the opposite direction so that the fingers, instead of pointing away from his body as had been the case, now pointed towards his body. The cylinder started to spin but in the opposite direction. "You are blowing upon it," I said. "Everyone says that," said the medical Lama Chinro Bonobo, "but they are completely wrong. The great medical lama went to a recess in the far wall, and returned bearing a sheet of glass. It was quite a thick sheet, and he carried it carefully to my guide the lama Minya Dondup. My guide stopped the cylinder from rotating and sat quiet while the great medical lama Chinro Bonobo placed the sheet of glass between my guide and the paper cylinder.